Chapter 10. Opus Pocus. Breathe, Amelia Jones. Inhale and exhale. Take deep breaths and relax. I'm fine, Jai. We walk across campus, headed for Harmony Hall. Classes are over for the day, and despite my words, I feel like a giant alarm clock has been hung around my neck, counting down the days to the Composium. Absently, my hand digs into my pocket to toy with the dandelion seed in the vial. I've gotten into the habit of carrying it around so Phoebe doesn't find it during her room checks. I'm just keeping it safe so I can be sure to give it back to Mr. Midnight, untouched, with no favors owed. I'm definitely not keeping it close because I'm tempted to use it. At least that's what I keep telling myself. "Are you really fine?" Jai lifts an eyebrow. If I were you, I'd be screaming into a pillow. I'd be chewing my nails off while hiding under my bed. I'd be thinking, I need to invent a bloody magnum opus so everyone at the school wouldn't hate my guts forever. I glare at him. Is this your idea of relaxing? Just saying, he replies, pushing open the big wooden doors to Harmony Hall's common area. I've got a bad feeling about this Luca what's-his-face, the prodigy composer. I'm glad it's you going against him, not me. Cringing, I recall the Sousa kid's magic, how confident he looked leading his school's team. What if I did make a huge mistake? I didn't even know I could compose until a few weeks ago. Hey, easy. There is one bright side. You've got us. Hey, Dobby, Mia. He waves at the girls who are coming down the stairs from their afternoon language arts class. I stop short. What's wrong? Jai asks. Right. I haven't told him the full extent of Mia's coldness toward me, or how she warned me to stay away from Darby. Mia matches gazes with me and smiles. Only now I see the look behind her smile, the one no one else seems to see. It reminds me of the way some animals have bright colors to warn you of the poison just beneath the surface. I need to figure out how to deal with Mia. I can't seem to avoid her, not when we have classes and meals together and even share a bathroom. I have no idea how to win her over. Maybe if I ignore her, she'll get bored and find someone else to torment. I was just telling Amelia, we've got her back in the Composium, Jai says, giving them meaningful looks. Of course we do, Darby says, clutching a copy of The Phantom of the Orchestra. If we fail, we fail together. I give her a grateful smile, even as my stomach sinks. That wasn't exactly the vote of confidence I was hoping for. Yeah, says Mia, and I'm sure the whole school won't blame her for blowing their chance at redemption. They'll all totally move on, like she didn't just embarrass them in front of the entire world. Come on, Darby, let's go. You're not going to embarrass anyone, Darby tells me. Mia scowls. I said come on, before someone else claims the showers. She drags Darby out by her elbow, and my former roommate casts an apologetic look my way. Honestly, why does she let Mia push her around like that? I've seen Darby put kids twice her size in their place. So what mysterious power does Mia hold over her? Does she not see how controlling and mean that girl is? Don't let her get to you, Jai says. She's probably just jealous of the attention. It'd be easier if everyone at this school stopped looking at me like they thought I could peel the moon out of the sky. When Jai lifts a questioning finger, I add, and no, I can't actually do that, so don't ask. He pats my shoulder. Chin up, Jones. We can figure this out. How far along is your spell? What will it do? Can I hear a few meshes? I just look at him until realization dawns on his face. Oh, he says, you haven't even started on it. I want to, but all Miss Mott has me do in our classes is write down my feelings and make mood jewelry that doesn't even work. I hold up the beads, which are now registering relaxed blue. Half the time, I don't know if I'm in composing class or art lessons. What you need is inspiration. Jai begins pacing in front of the grand fireplace, his hands clasped behind his back, as if he were solving a crime. I sling myself sideways into an armchair and watch him. What inspires Amelia Jones? I have seen you look at a bowl of ice cream with something like passion. I think this is going to take more than an ode to moose tracks. True, sadly. He pats his stomach. Well, when you composed that black spell, you thought of your mum, right? Yeah, I sit up. You know, I found the notebook where she recorded her compositions when she was a student here. I wonder if she wrote down the spell she created for the trials. That's it, cries Jai. Inspiration! Where's the notebook? I sigh. Too late. Someone stole her spells. The pages are torn out. Show me anyway. Maybe there's something you missed. Doubtful, I lead him upstairs to the attic classroom. This is the first time I've showed it to anyone, and I feel a little embarrassed when he sees how shabby and dusty it is. I don't think Miss Mott really notices things like cobwebs, I say, brushing one off my sleeve. And the maintenance workers seem to have forgotten about this place. This is fantastic. Jai turns a full rotation, taking it all in. It's like a secret club. Yep, a jolly old club of one. I take down my mother's notebook and open it. See? Her spells are all gone. Weird. Jai runs his finger over the torn edges. Who'd steal your mum's spells? And why? Maybe she took them when she graduated. Then why not take the whole notebook? It was hers, after all. No. Somebody tore them out so they'd get away with it. A missing notebook might have drawn more attention, but a few pages, not so much. I guess this is a dead end. A voice sounds from the doorway. What's a dead end? Jai and I turn to see Darby there, leaning on the frame. What are you doing here? I ask. I left my homework in Eros class, but then I saw you two. She pushes off the wall. It looks like you were onto something. Thought maybe I could help. And if Mia catches us hanging out, I wonder inwardly. But you know what? Who cares what Mia thinks? I'm tired of her pushing me around, and even tireder of her pushing Darby around. Darby deserves better friends than that. Come see, I say. I show her the notebook and explain my mom's missing spells, how they might have helped me compose. So, you want to know who took the spells? I mean, I don't know how. She groans, Amelia, you're a musician. Start thinking magically. If you want to know who stole your mom's spells, just find out. How? Darby picks up my flute case and pushes it into my hands. A little thing called magic. Ever heard of it? You know a spell to find them? I know 100 finding spells, but that won't work here. If they're not on school property, the trail could lead 1,000 miles away. Just figure out who took them and go from there. And you know a spell for that? She looks away thoughtfully, then shakes her head. That's trickier. But I bet some kind of time spell would help. Looking at my expectant expression, she adds, And no, I don't know any time spells. Which is why you'll have to compose one. What? I gasp. Wait, Jai says. No. Sorry. Gotta draw the line there, ladies. This is the worst idea. Haven't you heard the old saying? Time is the strongest magic. Very, very dangerous. Probably as dangerous as black spells. It's purple magic, Darby points out, which is really just a subset of blue spells, and those get played all the time. There's a reason you have to have a license to play teleportation spells, I say, and time magic is even more dangerous. Which is why, Darby grins, it'd be especially impressive to perform a time spell at the Composium. Nothing too fancy, just open a little window to the past and take a peek. That's the Darby I'm used to seeing. Full of bold plans and ideas, even if those ideas sound terrifying and borderline illegal. It feels like old times, when we were running around Mistwick trying to capture ghosts or kidnap Mrs. LaRue's music hat. It figures that the real Darby would make an appearance only when Mia's on the other side of campus. Jai opens his mouth to argue with her, then stops and cocks his head. You know, that's actually not a bad idea. I fling up my hand. You literally just said this is the worst idea. Which is probably why Mr. Luca, whatever his name is, from the Sousa Fancy Butt Academy, would never even think of it. He composed a spell to let you remember your best memory. So, you can compose a spell that lets you actually look back through time and see it. Talk about a magnum opus. He grins. Go on, Amelia. Try it. I look from Jai to Darby, speechless, waiting for someone to interject sense into all this. But no one does. And I suppose that in the end, I'm just desperate enough to try. I think briefly of the dandelion seed hidden in my pocket and feel a moment's temptation. But no. Maybe they're right. Maybe a time spell could win this thing. And maybe I can compose one. All on my own. No favors from mysterious orchestras needed. Stand back, I sigh, opening my flute case. Like, really back. Right. A window to the past. That sounds totally doable, right? I mean, if I can open the wall between life and death, why not between past and present? Still, doubt makes my flute feel twice as heavy as I raise it to my lips. After calming my breath and doing my best to clear my head, I begin playing. The notes are tentative at first, as I feel my way into a melody. It's like stepping onto a tightrope, my balance all over the place, my stomach wobbling like Graham's Jell-O casserole. I harness my thoughts to the notebook in front of me. Who did this? Who stole the spells? My question becomes my music, the notes low and eerie. I pick out a minor key, each note bound to a word. Who? Who was here? Who opened this book? Who tore out its pages? Show me. Show me. Show me. Is it working? Asks Jai in a hush. Where's the magic? My hands grow sweaty, but I can't stop playing long enough to wipe them. This hasn't happened before. When I composed in the past, the magic started flowing right away. So what am I doing wrong? I frantically think of Miss Mott's lessons, if you can call them that. Emotion is key, she'd said. So I try to reach for some. I think of the B I got on my world music craft test this morning, how relieved and happy I'd been, given that I'd kinda sorta forgotten about it completely and had to wing it with no studying. Just like that, a shining droplet of light forms at the end of the flute and then drops. The droplet splashes on the creaky old floorboards and sends shimmering purple ripples flowing outward. Across the attic, Jai and Darby step closer. Ignoring them, pouring all my focus into my flute, I repeat the melody over and over, staring hard at the notebook. Who are you? Who did this? Who stole the spells that should have been mine? Who took what didn't belong to them? More magic shimmers from my flute, branches of violet light that grow outward and bend and twist, forming a kind of glowing picture frame in midair. Not unlike the portal that took me to the Midnight Orchestra, only smaller. The magic smells strongly of melting plastic. Let me see what happened. Show me who was here. And just like that, the air inside the magic frame shines white. I blink hard, blinded, and feel the others creeping up behind me, too curious to stay back any longer. It's working, breathes Darby. The white light gradually fades, replaced by the attic. My heart almost falls, until I realize that the attic I'm gazing at through the magic frame is clean. No dust or cobwebs here. The walls and ceiling gleam as if freshly polished. And there's more light from actual lamps, not just candles. The frame shows the shelf with the notebooks on it, and I see my mother's there, looking newer than it does now. My heart begins to race. It's working. I play on, forcing my fingers to maintain an even tempo. Rushing now, no matter how excited I am, could botch the spell. But the longer I play, the stranger I start to feel. My body gets shaky all over, my stomach clenching like I'm going to throw up. I blink hard, trying to banish the wave of dizziness in my head. What's happening to me? My breath catches when a shadow flickers across the scene in the magic frame. Someone's moving around, just out of sight. My spell is focused on the shelf with the notebooks, but I wonder if... Very carefully, I shift my body, turning to face the attic door. The spell moves with me, the frame sliding across the room and showing other parts of the attic. I turn, turn, turn. There. Someone is searching another shelf behind me, hunched over and in shadow. It's a man, wearing a wide-brimmed hat that hides his face. He searches methodically, then moves on to the desks, his heavy boots making the floor creak. His long black coat is damp on the shoulders, as if he's walked through rain or snow to get here. Battling a surge of exhaustion and weakness, I play on, determined to see the spell through. When he doesn't find what he's looking for in the desks, he pounds a fist in frustration, then catches sight of the last shelf, where my mother's notebook is. He walks quickly toward it, moving so fast I lose sight of him. I have to slowly turn around again before I find him once more, running his gloved hands over the notebooks. When he finds my mother's, he freezes a moment, his finger resting on the spine. Then he pulls it down and tears it open, flipping pages frantically. I can see the sweat on the back of his neck. Sweat is also running down my neck, my body feeling like it's shrinking. Nausea in my belly rises to my throat. What is happening to me? Suddenly, a thunk sounds, and I jump, thinking someone's at the door. But the man in the past reacts too, and I realize the sound came from his time, not mine. He looks toward the door, then back at the notebook. In one swift, angry motion, he rips out all the spells.
"You can't be here!"
a voice shouts. The man turns.
"Get back!"
he snarls.
"I'll only warn you once."
In that moment, the light hits his face, and the flute drops from my hands.